I get so inspired when I listen again to my interviews with people like Bruce Turkell. He said, perception is everything. It's not what you do, but it's what others perceive that you do. And so my story, I created a business. I do consult. But if I position myself as a consultant, I get lost in all of the other consultants. However, I call myself the drop-in CEO, and that conjures up a completely different image and perception of what people think that I do for them. So let's listen to Bruce now.
But musicians that you see on stage, you don't actually know how good they are. You only know what they present to you. But they've practiced every single day and learned new arpeggios and new ways of playing their music. That doesn't make their performances necessarily any better, especially to an uneducated audience who's just digging whatever it is they're doing. But we focus on that because we're so convinced that we have to get better at what we do. But the truth is, at some point of professional quality, getting better doesn't do more things for us. What we need to do is be better known. What we need to do is be better understood. You don't need to change what you're doing. You need to change what the people you want to sell to think, and more importantly, feel about what you're doing.
Welcome to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I'm Deb Coviello, and as the Drop-In CEO, I drop into businesses and assume the CEO role to enhance the human element and increase the results they achieve. This podcast is about bringing you conversations with expert guests who have achieved their greatest results built on a strong foundation of purpose, values, and elevating people. If you're a business leader, entrepreneur, or even just getting started in business, join us as we build the skills you need to achieve your goals.
Hello, I am Deb Coviello, founder of Illumination Partners, and I want to thank you for joining us on another episode of the Drop-In CEO podcast, where I get to speak to CEOs, industry leaders that have amazing insights. And if you like this show, please, please subscribe, rate, and review so we can continue to bring you great programming. And I'd also like to make you this offer. I am the CEO's guide to elevating your business and team through rapid change and ultimately bring you peace of mind. For more information about my consulting services, Leadership Academy, and coaching, contact me at dropinceo.com and let's continue the conversation. And now I am just overjoyed to share the interview, share the mic with my fantastic guest today, Bruce Turkell. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Deb. I'm thrilled to be here.
You know, Bruce, the reason why, and I gave a lot of thought to this, why I wanted to bring you onto the show, I seem to have an affinity towards people that are leaders in the brand messaging industry because, you know, there are amazingly talented leaders, CEOs in business, but it seems that personal branding, business branding is the missing link in their DNA, that it's so integral, but it's almost emotional, it's personal, and so underdeveloped. But before we get into your story, I just want to share with my listeners, you've got an amazing background. Bruce, you have created some of the world's most compelling brands, including Hasbro, Nike, American Express, Charles Schwab. You've worked with them to create amazing brands, as well as you have been seen on TV quite a bit on the national news, including CNN, International, MSNBC, et cetera. You're a prolific writer. You've been interviewed and featured in the New York Times, Fast Company, as well as, and I will say, you are a 2017 NSA National Speakers Association inductee into the Speaker Hall of Fame. So I am grateful for having you on the show. Again, you have so many other accomplishments. I'm sure we'll get into it, but I would be remiss if I didn't also say that you play harmonica and you front the popular band Miami R&B Black Star. So amazing, amazing resume. So
thank you.
You're so interesting, and I can't wait for you to share with our listeners now. Please share a little bit about yourself personally, your business journey, and the work that you're doing now.
I'm glad this is recorded because every time I hear an introduction like that, I just wish my mother and my wife were listening. My journey is quite simple. I was born and grew up, believe it or not, on Miami Beach. I actually grew up on South Beach. I went to the University of Florida. I studied design. I moved to New York. I came back to Miami. I opened an ad agency. That is really my entire career path. While I was running the agency, over time, I realized that our clients, the people who hired us to sell their products, didn't understand about branding or messaging strategy, exactly what you said earlier. They spent all their time working on the function of what they did, being good at producing their products or delivering their services. And they spent very little time on building the messaging strategy, relationships with their customers, on the perception their customers had of who they were and what they did. So I kind of did a turn and moved our firm into what I called at the time a brand management firm. Those didn't exist back then. And the idea was we helped companies figure out who they were, why they mattered, and then how they could express that. From that, I realized and I learned that people needed that as well. So I wrote a few books on it. My most recent one is called All About Them. And the whole concept is how you build your brand around a customer-centric point of view instead of around a company-centric point of view. How you talk about your customer instead of talking about yourself. How to make your brand not be a bad blind date, basically. And a few years ago, I sold the agency and I spend my time consulting with clients, speaking at conferences until March 15th when we all stopped going anywhere. And I recently wrote a new book titled, Is That All There Is? And the book is about people who reach a relative level of success in their lives and then decide to change. Some people change for good reasons. They sell a company for a lot of money, or they have the financial wherewithal to do whatever they want. Some people change for bad reasons. They get divorced, or they get diagnosed with a disease, or they go bankrupt, or whatever. But I interviewed almost 30 people who have gone through the process and then come out on the other side. And I talk about what they learned from the experience and what you all, the people I'm writing for, can learn that they can apply to their own lives. And branding, actually, and messaging is a big part of it.
I was not aware of that. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because I seem to attract people that are going through changes who may be stuck in their career, thinking of taking the leap, or even if they're a private consultant, life has changed. And how can they rebrand themselves, remessage, and move through that? But I'm curious, because, and this is one of the questions here, is that after interviewing 30 some odd people, what were the key either struggles or things that got them through to the other side? Because I'm sure many of the listeners may also be struggling.
It's the zeitgeist of our times. If you talk to people, at first I thought it would be people 45 to 65, but as I did more and more exploration, what I found is it's really people from their early 30s sometimes, all the way up to 80 years old, who have to change their lives and often change them more than once. And I can't say I was that prescient. I started this before COVID. But since the COVID crisis, so many of us have to change our lives simply because the former ways that we made our livelihood or spent our time have changed. If you talk to realtors, realtors will tell you that people buy or sell homes mostly for 7 D's. Let's see how many of them I remember. Disease, divorce, debt, downsizing. I wrote all about it. I should remember them, right? There's two more. But anyways, a disaster, and there's one more, but you get the point. All bad things. And I think you could add two more if you talk about why people change their lives. It's for all those reasons: disease, divorce, debt, disaster, downsizing. But you could add disappointment and disillusionment. Even if you're incredibly successful at what you do, at some point it becomes, oh, I'm going to do that again. And, you know, we decide what we're going to do generally in our lives when we're teenagers or young adults, because either a parent, a grandparent, or a neighbor has convinced us we should study something in school, or we have a particular aptitude, or we simply think it's a good idea. And we study that, and then we follow the path. And for the most part, we have relative success. I'm not talking about deciding whether you should pick the Gulfstream or the Lear to go to Gstaad for the winter. But you're also, for the most part, not worrying about, am I going to purchase medicine or am I going to feed my family? If you are, you have much more existential issues to deal with. So you get to some point in your life where you hear Peggy Lee singing the song, Is That All There Is? There was a story on NPR. They were interviewing a guy who was in his mid-60s and he was a very successful oral surgeon, but he was giving it all up. And he was giving it up to become, and I forget what, but some woo-woo job. He wanted to be a sailmaker, or raise llamas or alpacas or make candles, you know, one of those kind of things. And the interviewer, who was clearly a young man, I don't know, in his late 20s, was asking this guy why he was doing that. And he said, well, because I've always wanted to be, let's say, a sailmaker for the sake of argument. I've always wanted to be a sailmaker, but I was focused on being an oral surgeon. And the guy said, well, if you always wanted to be a sailmaker, why were you an oral surgeon? And the older man says, well, I'm an oral surgeon because an 18-year-old boy thought I should be an oral surgeon. Now, the interviewer didn't understand what that meant, but we all did, right? It was very interesting. And he said, if I asked an 18-year-old boy today at 65, hey, what should I do for the rest of my life? I wouldn't listen to him. So why do I listen to that 18-year-old boy? Of course, that 18-year-old boy was him who said, you ought to study pre-med, then you ought to go to dental school, then you ought to become an oral surgeon. And I think so many of us reach that point where we say, yeah, I'm good at this. I've done it for a long time. It's made me a good living. It's put my kids through school or whatever. But now what? So my goal now is to use everything I've learned in my career to help people see, discover the value in their future years and what they're going to do next and show them how to get there. Not the way I think they should get there, by the way, but the way people who have done it say you should get there.
I love that story because it resonates so much with where I am. And as you said, it could be anybody in their life, whether it's 30, 45, 65. I think what this conversation does is it gives us permission to acknowledge we're at crossroads. We want to do something different. We may have been very successful, as you said, but now's the time to evaluate your purpose, your own brand, who you are, what gets you up at night, and start thinking about branding as re-emerging and do something that gives you great joy and more purposeful than what you've already done. Beautiful. Now, Bruce, one of the things you said to me, or I saw in some of your work really, really resonated. I think it's pivotal to some of the talking events that you do. You say, don't change what you do, change the perception of what you do. Because I actually asked somebody one day, you know, as I'm going up in my career, I said, what should I change? And he said, change nothing, just be yourself. But you had the interesting angle about don't change what you do, change the perception of what you do. Can you share more about that?
Of course. We all spend our education, our training, our internships, our entry-level time learning how to do a craft. We are no longer interns or apprentices like they used to have in Europe, you know, for silversmiths or goldsmiths or leather workers or whatever. But we do spend a lot of time becoming good at what we do. And many of us actually reach that goal. I mean, if you're not good at what you do, you're not in business. You're not going to get work. So we've gotten to a point of professional quality. If you haven't, as I said earlier, you have bigger problems than what we're dealing with here. But you get to a point where you're good at what you do, and you certainly get to a point where you're as good at what you do as what your client could expect or want or need. And you'll always get better. But getting better does not mean you're going to get more business or you're going to get more clients or you're even going to make them happier. I mean, think in terms that we all understand but may not participate in, positions that you see on stage. You don't actually know how good they are. You only know what they present to you. But they've practiced every single day and learned new arpeggios and new ways of playing their music. That doesn't make their performances necessarily any better, especially to an uneducated audience who's just digging whatever it is they're doing. But we focus on that because we're so convinced that we have to get better at what we do. But the truth is, at some point of professional quality, getting better doesn't do more things for us. What we need to do is be better known. What we need to do is be better understood. You don't need to change what you're doing. You need to change what the people you want to sell to think, and more importantly, feel about what you're doing. Function is cost of entry. Function is the ante you pay to gamble, to play in a game of chance. If you walk into a casino in Vegas and you go up to the poker table, you have to ante up to play. If you don't lay down your ante, they don't let you play. But just because you do ante up does not mean you win. And so the idea is you've paid your ante. Now you got to do the next thing. And the next thing is change what people think about what it is you do. And let's go all the way back to what I talked about earlier. Don't change what they think about you. Change what they think about how you make them think about themselves. Good brands make people feel good, but great brands make people feel good about themselves. So a good brand, oh, look, I just bought this, whatever. Isn't that nice? I love driving this car, wearing these shoes, going on this vacation, whatever, right? I feel good. But a great brand, I say, look what I have. Look what I do. Look how this makes me feel about myself. Look how smart I am. My wife is into gardening and she has a beautiful vegetable garden. And she could buy different kinds of seeds and different kinds of soil. She actually has a preference, believe it or not, in cow manure. We went to get some with our old pickup truck and she said, oh, no, I don't like that cow manure. I like a different kind of cow manure. Now, let's face it, without getting rude here, what's in the bag, right? The first word is bull, and we all know what the second word is. But because her vegetables are so beautiful and they give her so much joy and so much pleasure, that other brand of cow manure gave her better vegetables in her mind and in her heart. Therefore, she felt better about herself. And so now she's loyal to a brand of cow manure. I know it's silly, but it's exactly what we all need to do as well.
Your message is so strong because as I think about it, and I actually had somebody tell me they couldn't hire me because I didn't have PCQI food safety certification. They couldn't check the box on me. And so I proceeded to get that certification. In the end, they wound up hiring me as a consultant, not because of the certification, but because how they remember me. Many, many years ago when I used to work with a subsidiary of them, they remembered me, the impact, how I made them feel, and the knowledge that I would give them peace of mind.
You bring up a really interesting point. They wouldn't hire you without the certification. At level glance, that suggests that what I said about function is wrong because you needed to have that function. But in fact, what it says is that function is cost of entry. You didn't have it. Therefore, you didn't have the cost of entry requirement. But once you did and they could check the box off, then there had to be something else for them to hire you. Checking that box off, follow me because this gets a little confusing, but checking that box off only keeps them from not hiring you, right? If you didn't have it, you weren't getting hired. But just because you did have it didn't mean you'd get hired. Plenty of people have that certification and didn't get hired. So I'm not suggesting we ignore the function of what we do. We don't pay attention to the quality of what we do. That's cost of entry. All I'm suggesting is once you achieve it, we then have to ladder up and figure out the next step. And that is, how do we make the customer feel about themselves for bringing you in?
All right. Beautifully said. I am going to switch this up because you are multidimensional. Let's get into your speaking. You are obviously an amazing speaker, but I found it interesting. There was a video about the interactive harmonica experience. And you, one thing in there was about thinking differently, feeling differently, and acting differently. Tell us about that experience.
Sure. I'd be delighted. Pull out a harmonica and I play a little ditty by, well, it's not a ditty. It's actually a piece of classical music by Johann Sebastian Bach. Sometimes I do minuet in G, sometimes I do something else, but whatever. I play his music. And then I play a piece of music by Sonny Boy Williamson, blues music. And the idea is that both of those guys are very different. Both of those pieces of music are incredibly different, but they use the same notes. Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. They use all the same notes because really that's all there is. And as you build your brand, as you build your life, as you figure out what you're going to do, you're going to use the same skill set. So I establish that as a benchmark. Then I go through my presentation and I talk about things that are hidden in plain sight, things that are right there in front of you that you don't see, but that make all the difference. I talk about how you make people feel about themselves and on and on. At the end of the presentation, I talk about getting out of your comfort zone, you know, all the different things that I talk about. I have them reach under their chairs where we've taped harmonicas and they all pull out their own harmonica. The idea is, you know, I talked about things that are right in front of you that you don't see. You've been sitting on the thing for an hour and you didn't know it was there. And then things you don't know how to do or getting out of your comfort zone, I teach them to play this little ditty. It's a little inhale and a little exhale. But then I have them all stand up and I hit the button on the iPod. And it plays a song that they all know and they all can play along from the little ditty that I taught them. And it does a number of things, right? It shows them how so many different things are possible, how you can express your creativity. By the way, when they're done, they're already standing and applauding when I say thank you very much. So it generates an automatic standing ovation, which is always a good thing. But here's the best part. They go home and their husbands or their wives or their partners or whoever says, hey, honey, what did you do at this convention? And do they say, I learned how to amortize my accounting generation documentation? Do they, if it's medical, do they say, I learned how to do this new procedure? No, they say, I learned how to play a Beatles song on the harmonica. Watch this. and then they play it because what does that make them feel about themselves? And that's what they remember. And I can't tell you how many times I'll call someone or they'll call me and they'll say, your harmonica has been on my desk for 5 years. And I always say, have you been practicing? And they go, no, not that much. But I can play that song you taught me. And the idea is that it's an emotional experience. It's interactive. But it allows them to help identify themselves. And more importantly, it takes a little bit of who I am, my brand, and it makes it consumer-centric. I share it with them. So I don't change what I do, right? I rehearse and I practice and I play the harmonica. I change the way they perceive what I do. Because now they can do it. And it, now I don't sell harmonica lessons. I don't sell harmonicas. I give them away. That's not the point. The point is to build the brand by making them feel better about themselves.
You know, that's beautiful because I differentiate myself from other consultants. Consultants can come in, do an assessment, give you a checklist, give you an invoice, and then they leave. But you haven't necessarily impacted the people. And I think the best business leaders, the best consultants, not only have their functional point of entry, they make a difference in terms of a business issue, but how you communicate with the people, how you make them feel. I am doing an assignment right now where, hey, we're doing white belt training. We're helping them to find process improvements, very elementary stuff. But every time we get off the phone, I thank them. I tell them what a great job they're doing. I show them how they're making a difference. And then they come back. And when I say, how are we doing? How do you feel? They say, oh, I feel really great. You know, I really, really appreciate it. I showed my boss what I'm doing. We are in the business, not just to fix problems, but to emotionally connect with people and change how they feel, as you say, because we made a connection and left a lasting impact. So I love brand messaging. And I love the harmonica story. And I love how you do that because I also have a business video where my love of curling, I throw stones on ice and I talk about my passion for that and how I bring strategy, understanding the skills of the people that you're dealt with and bringing into business. So I think people need to connect the human side of what they do with the business side. And obviously you're an avid musician. And everybody should start bringing those two together to make people feel better. I have an interesting question for you. I noticed that you also host a mastermind, and there's so many masterminds going on, but you really address a really interesting point, why you brought people together, and you talk about certainty, that people are lost, worried, and what do they do next? But you say one of the things that you do when you recently brought people together was to address the topic of certainty. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. We are in incredibly uncertain times. We don't know what's going to happen with the pandemic. We don't know what's going to happen with civil rights and our systems. And right now, I don't know when people are listening to this, but when you and I are recording it, we don't know what's going to happen with the election, the presidential election, and not even to take sides here. We simply don't know. We are in an incredible period of uncertainty. We don't know what's going to happen with the economy. We don't know what's going to happen with our ability to travel, with our ability to see our friends and family. We're recording this a week before Thanksgiving. We don't know what's going to happen with our ability to sit across the table from our loved ones, right? We're just in this enormous, enormous cauldron of uncertainty. And so as we try to figure out what's next, which, as I told you earlier, is what I've been working on so diligently, not being able to step off from a point of certainty into a point of certainty makes it very hard. In the old days, when it was 30 years with a company and a gold watch and a retirement and then joining the golf club or the bowling league or whatever, that was certainty. That may or may not have been what you wanted, but there was pretty clear certainty. And today there's not. And so one of the things that I have found that is so difficult for people to do is to figure out their plan, their strategy, their next steps when they don't know what's going to happen. Because the answer is always, but what if that doesn't happen? But what if this doesn't happen? If you're trying to plan your investments for the future, well, I don't know what interest rates are going to be. Well, I don't know how long I'm going to live. Well, right? There's all these moving parts. So if you distill it down, go back to the marketing guy in me, the branding person that I've been for all these years, if you distill it down, what is the one thing that we can control? And there's only one thing. That's us. You know, if you go back and read Frankl's great books on what he did when he was a prisoner in concentration camps, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, he talks about that. I couldn't control what happened to me. I couldn't control how I was treated. I couldn't control how I was fed. I could only control how I reacted. And so we can find certainty by understanding who we are, what matters to us, and how we want to move forward, regardless of what we encounter. Mark Twain said the two most valuable days of your life is the day you're born and the day you figure out why. There's nothing we can do about the first one. A, it's already been done, and B, we had nothing to do with it. And it's likely that you don't ever figure out the second one, but you can work on it. You can spend, there's very clear exercises that we've developed as I was listening to all these people tell me how they figured out what to do. And I learned so much and came up with exercises and technologies to use to get you on that path. It's not navel gazing. It's not woo-woo stuff. I'm not a real woo-woo guy. Some of the people I interviewed were, and I included that because who's to say I'm right? But there are clear exercises that you can take, that you can follow to come out with an answer, to say, okay, here's what matters to me. Here's what I want to do. Here's where I want to go. You know the old saying, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. If you don't ask the right questions, the answers don't matter. And so I can't tell you where you should wind up. That's completely up to you, but I can help you figure out where it is you want to go. Why? Because I learned from all these people who have done it.
You know, the point about uncertainty can happen with this crisis, and it can happen for the next and the next. But what comes out of this is that leaders, whether you're a CEO or up and coming your business, it's sometimes a very lonely place. We need to find those support systems, and you offer a mastermind to bring people together, if nothing else, to say we're all in the same boat or spark new ways of thinking. One-on-one coaching, another support system. We need to be able to evaluate who we are, where we're going, and as you say, do it with the right support system. And at least to your point, you can control how you think, how you feel, and where you're going, regardless of where the times are taking us. But I am curious because, you know, this podcast are for CEOs or business leaders, and sometimes they have difficulty finding their brand messaging. I would love to know a story in your business where a leader wanted to find their brand messaging in order to improve their market share, marketing, et cetera, but they had a real challenge being able to articulate, see, or feel what it was. And what did you do to help them bring them over the finish line to find what that brand message was?
Oh, quite simple. We were hired by Bacardi to help them. The specific issue they gave us was they wanted to sell their more premium rum products to what's known as LDA, legal drinking age. So that means youthful drinkers, usually 21 plus, wherever you go. So we had the very difficult task of needing to do research, and we sent people to bars around the country to talk to people ordering drinks to find out why they drank certain things, why they ordered certain things. What we learned is that young drinkers talk sophisticated but drink sweet, first of all. They will talk about, oh, I drink this, I drink that, she, ho, ho, ho. But in fact, they drink very sweet drinks. Number two, the drinks they mostly drank were drinks they were already comfortable with. So most younger drinkers liked at the time, like screwdrivers because it was orange juice, which they knew, with vodka, or they liked rum and Coke because they knew Coke. And also because when they were a kid at either a christening or a bar mitzvah or whatever, they all had that crazy uncle who said, hey, kid, try this. Or they drank beer because they knew what it was. We also found out that they were not drinking because of the fine textures of the peat in the scotch or the smoky whatever, or the long nose and the short finish. Basically, it was what I believe we called the three L's, which was get loaded, get lucky, and I'll leave the last one to your imagination. So I was making this presentation to the folks at Bacardi, and a guy walks into the room who was not in our committee, but clearly was someone of importance. And I could see that everyone in the room paid deference to him. And I kept going through my presentation. At some point, he said, and he had a beautiful, beautiful way of speaking. He was beautifully dressed. He said, pardon me, with no disrespect, but when my grandfather went from Cuba to Puerto Rico with the recipe for Bacardi rum sewn in his lapel, he did not do it for people to be able to get lucky, loaded and get lucky. And I realized who he was. He was one of the Bacardi heirs. And he went on and on about the product and the oak casks and all that sort of stuff, which everyone in the room knew. And I knew it too, because we had researched the company. So I said to him, well, sir, with all due respect, we were not asked to go talk to 45-year-old physicians who are retiring on the NI after, after heart. we were asked to talk to youthful drinkers about what it was they wanted. And I'm sorry to tell you this, but they don't really care about that. And in fact, they have very other motivations for why they choose to buy or not buy your products. And he starts explaining to me again. And I said, again, with all due respect, which, by the way, when someone says to you, with all due respect, it means you're about to take it in the shorts, right? You kind of know that. But he says, with all due respect, with all due respect, sir, when was the last time you bought Bacardi? And he said, what do you mean? That's the only thing I buy. I said, no, sir, I understand. You go into a bar, you pull out your Amex Black card from the company, you give it to the bartender, and you say, Bacardi for everyone. That's a promotional thing. But when was the last time you had $20 in your pocket for the entire weekend? You were going to a party. A friend of yours said, hey, get a bottle of rum, would you? And you could have bought Bacardi for $18 or Old Mr. Boston for $12. And he says, oh, Mr., but I wouldn't. I said, no, sir, I understand you wouldn't. But when was the last time you were in that situation? And he says, well, never. And I said, exactly. And I never have been either, or at least I haven't been in 30 years. And by the way, when I leave your meeting, the security guard, Hector, in the garage, he always has me open my trunk and he puts a case of your products into my trunk. My employees loved when I came back from Bacardi Day because I would be giving out these bottles. I said, so I haven't had that experience either. But the people you want to sell to, that is their experience. So if you don't mind, let me tell you what they think and, more importantly, what they feel. And at that point, he said, I understand. Please continue.
Wow. Very bold, very respectful, but you got him to listen.
He was great. Once he was able to remove his emotional connection, which, hell, I understand. I mean, his grandfather overcame all those great problems in order to do this. But once he got past that, oh my goodness, he was the best because he totally got it. He was totally into it. And he saw it as a way to help people see how they can improve the experience they had with his products.
I mean, what I get out of that message was just pure bravery. Again, being confident in what you do, being confident that you need to take your client on a journey, being very respectful, communicating a message about the people that they serve, and then you were able to continue the work. My message here for any up-and-coming leaders, if you don't think that you have enough clout or confidence to be able to say what needs to be said, regardless of the level of leadership in the room, you might want to think differently because you have as much influence or impact as long as you connect with them emotionally and how they think. We could go on and on. We have not touched on so many things. You blog, you do consulting, speak, books, everything. But, you know, as we think about bringing this to a close and you want to send a message either to CEOs of companies or up-and-coming leaders, what are some key learnings or lessons about brand messaging or who they are and who they serve that you want to share with our listeners?
Oh, I have a number of them. I hope they're all self-explanatory. I'd be happy to help people with them further if they like. But one we said already, which is good brands make people feel good, but great brands make people feel good about themselves. Critical to remember that. Another one, you've already said it, don't change what you do, change the perception of what you do. Something else that I would add is that people don't choose what you do or what you sell. They choose who you are. And if you think about the world today, people have access to products, goods, and services from anywhere in the world at almost no appreciable downside. In the old days, you just had to be the best at what you did in your trading area. Because if you were a plumber or a lawyer or a business owner or a CEO or an entrepreneur or an artist or whatever, you only had to be better than the people around you, both better at doing your job and better at getting the word out. But today, we all carry these magical devices that know everything, right? And can connect us with everybody. I'm talking about smartphones. And so your customers can purchase from anywhere in the world. And DHL or UPS or the US Post Office or FedEx will deliver it same day, next day, 2 days later at no appreciable downside. It's cheaper. You may not pay tax. You usually don't pay shipping anymore. So all of a sudden, your competitive set has grown enormously. Back to what we said earlier about function, your function is cost of entry. If you're only selling function, I'm better off buying it online and getting it delivered tomorrow at half the price. But people don't choose what you do or what you buy. They choose who you are. They want to do business with you. There are 931 words, Deb, in the English language with the word ship in the word. marksmanship, sportsmanship, shipping, on and on and on. But the most important one is relationship. And the job of you as a CEO or an entrepreneur or a business leader or a leader in general, the job of your brand is not to build or sell product. It's not even to increase shareholder value. It's to build relationships. Because when you build relationships, you are creating a situation, a strength, a bond that overcomes health issues, financial issues, because people have a reason to do business with you. And the reason is because doing business with you makes them feel better about themselves.
Bruce, amazing messages. I am honored to have had you on my show. I know people will want to reach out to you, whether it's for speaking, consulting, reading your blogs, masterminds. You offer so much. If people wanted to connect with you, how best can they do that?
Very easy. My website is just my name. So it's bruceturkel.com. My email address is just my name. It's bruce@bruceturkel.com. I write a weekly blog about these sort of things. I've been doing it. I'm stunned when I think of this. I've been doing it since 2007. Comes out every week. I've never missed a week. So if you want it, you can either go on my website, bruceturkel.com, and click on the blog and you can sign up, or you can just send me an email. You talked about masterminds. So the website for mastermind, well, you can find it from bruceturkel.com, but I have a new one that starts in January. It's called CE Only. See, CEO Only. Get it? I know, it's very clever. And it's only for 12 CEOs. We already have a third of the seats taken. So if someone's interested in that, please let me know. Our tagline is, it's exclusive, explosive, and expensive. It's not that expensive. But if there's a CEO listening, or you know, anyone in the C-suite or business owner, really, or entrepreneur who's interested, just drop me a note. And like I say, there's no auto scheduler. There's no Salesforce. There's no sales funnel. I just give them my cell phone number and we talk about it. And then people go, yeah, I want to do that. Or, hey, you know what? It's not for me. Either way is cool with me because I know there's very few seats and we're going to fill them up. But because you were nice enough to invite me here, I'd like to offer that to your audience. You will really get a first shot. The only people who are coming so far are people who are in the other groups who said, yeah, I want to be in that as well. We have not announced this yet and it starts in January.
All right. Amazing. I know people are going to want to reach out to you. You have been a fantastic guest. I'm honored to have gotten some of your time to get to know you and share your thoughts with all of our listeners. I wish you success. Have a great weekend and be well, Bruce.
Yeah, thank you so much. You're the best. You really knew. I mean, I do a lot of these, I have to tell you. And it's so nice when you actually talk to someone who's looked at the stuff and knows what they're talking about, instead of asking general questions like, so why are you a success? And so what do you recommend? So I really appreciate it. You made me feel good about myself, which is your job. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Drop-In CEO podcast. I hope you are inspired by our conversation and can apply what you heard to your business or career goals. For more information about our consulting or coaching services, please visit my website at dropinceo.com or visit our Drop-In CEO Facebook group to continue the conversation. Now go out, lead, inspire, and achieve your goals.